Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 1 for Autumn Semester 2015. Lecture 7, delivered on September 10, 2015. The title of this lecture is The Yield Curve.
Today, the yield curve. Trying to convince you that the interest rates that we have in the economy and our estimates of those interest rates drive a lot of the decision making in finance. They drive what investors think interest rates are going to do, what they are. That drives stock and bond prices. The interest rate that we estimate for a project, the discount rate, will drive whether or not we say yes to the project. Interest rates are at the heart of much of what we do. And so we care very much about what those interest rates are and what they are going to do in our for our analyses. Now, the upshot of this lecture is that I'm going to show you how to predict the future with some degree of kind of accuracy. The tool that I'll use, it's kind of like an old trick. It can show you a window on the future. The window is dark. It can warn you of something that's not going. It's right when it's right, but it can also give you a false signal. So just because you see something happening doesn't mean it's going to, but there is a high likelihood that it's going to happen. I use this as one of my analytical tools to predict the Great Recession that we had in 2008. A few months before it happened, I saw the technical thing happen, and I'll show you how to do it. It's very easy. And that was one of a number of factors that gave me the call. And in my last article, before I said, the hell with it, you don't care, I said, here it is, it happened. And so, and based on all these other factors, we're going to go into something really bad. And that was in June. The crash happened in September. But to start this off, I talk about yields on treasury bills. I talk about interest rates, the interest rate, coupon rate on a bond, on a government bond, or on a corporate bond. And so I'm going to show you a little window on this real quick here, if I can get that. Now, what I'm going to show you here, the first thing is a chart of yields on very short-term treasury bills. Now, remember I told you that the risk-free rate, which is the real rate plus the expected inflation premium, that risk-free rate is a core rate that drives a lot of other rates. It's at the base of all interest rates, in a way. And our best proxy of it is the best estimate we have of the risk-free rate is the rate, the yield, on a very short-term treasury bill. Because it's essentially riskless, so it reflects nothing but a very short view of the real interest rate and the expected inflation premium. And there are, like I said, there are statistical tricks. We can tease those two pieces apart. But I really don't care to right away here. What I want to show you is what we're seeing right now in the economy. This is the yield on a very short-term T-bill. Essentially, you're seeing a, not exactly, but it's as close as we can come to the risk-free rate. And there it is. From about April on through to yesterday, I'm not sure they've updated the chart. This is stockcharts.com, which is actually one of those kind of open sites, but still has some really good stuff in it. But there you go. Now notice that it flops around, bounces hard, and that's just the buys and sells on the thing. You're actually seeing the granular action on that thing with buys and sells, open market operations happening, banks unloading them, loading them back up, treasury auctions happening, and all that. But as you can see, and okay, now the other thing you'll see in there, as well as the ups and downs, the hard ups and downs, you'll see a couple of smoother lines. Those are moving averages. In your stats course that you took, were you taught about moving averages? Okay, a moving average is just like a regular average, except that it has more weight on things that are happening, more recent data than on past data. So a normal average of these would just be add them up and divide by the number of data points. A moving average kind of moves forward in time. It takes away older data and gives more weight to newer data as it comes in. Now, you can weight them so that the weights are fairly similar, and so you'd have a smoother curve, or you can weight them more toward the present, and you'd have a little bit more jumpy curve. So the red line, the red smooth line you see there, is more like almost like a regular average. It's a moving average, but the weights of the present aren't that much more than the weights of older data. The one that is blue has more of the weight on more recent data. In either case, they kind of help us smooth out the hops and jumps and pops in the day-to-day data. So what you see there on the yield on this on the yields on short-term T-bills, anything stand out at you? Talk to me. Is there anything you see standing out at you on this? You don't see anything at all. Okay, let's try someone else here. Do you see anything looking at those, maybe at the blue line, so that gives you a... It's kind of moving up at the end. So what does that tell you? What does that tell you is happening? Yeah. Come on. Huh? we're working on it here. Work it. Talk to me. What do you see? The moving average is doing what? Increasing, as you said. What does that tell you is happening to interest rates? This is the base interest rate. All interest rates, as I showed you, sit on top of the risk-free rate. So what is happening to all interest rates? If this one is going up, talk to me, go.
It's going up.
Bingo, that's exactly right. So what is the implication for securities prices? If all interest rates are beginning to come up like this, what's that going to do to securities prices? All other things being equal. Say it. No. Yield and price are inversely related. Okay? Yield and... Yeah, we're looking at yields here. So in other words, what is happening now is that there is a gradual movement upward in the base interest rate. Remember that any interest rate that you calculate is going to be the risk-free rate, this marker sucks, plus that risk premium, the default maturity and all that, the risk premium. And I do appreciate that line, that sucks.com. Here, maybe I do this. Here. Yeah, that really worked. What the hell? Every time I put a good marker in here, some monkey comes and steals my... Oh, goody, we got a bunch of pencils. That's going to help me a whole lot. There. Any interest rate is the risk-free rate plus that risk premium that I told you about. This doesn't even, you can't even see this too well, but you got it in your notes. So all interest rates are parking, and as that risk-free rate goes up and down, all interest rates will go up and down coordinating with it, because that is the base of all interest rates. So as we see that risk-free rate, or at least the approximation of it called a treasury, short-term treasury bill yield, going upward, that should mean that all interest rates in the economy are going to start showing a tendency to rise. And as interest rates rise, that means that yields fall on bonds, on stocks. More importantly, if you remember from the last lecture we did, if an interest rate we're using for analyzing a project goes up, if we use a higher discount rate, what happens to the present value of that project as an interest rate? If I use a higher discount rate to bring back the cash flows, what happens to the project's present value? Bingo, it goes down, which means projects become less valuable, which means that companies are more likely to say no to projects. That means that as interest rates go up, we should, over a period of time, begin to see the economy slowing down. That's the intention that the Fed is doing here. This is clearly the activity of an open market operations that are beginning to no longer do those expansions, the traders buying treasury bills from the banks, so the banks have lots more money. It is clear from this that there is already effort by the Fed to pull in that constant pushing money into the economy, which would drive the yields on treasury bills down. What seems to be happening here is that even though the Fed hasn't said it's doing it yet, the Fed has begun to move away from a highly expansionary monetary policy toward a less expansionary monetary policy. Now, if you will look at those yields, look at the yields over the last, say, 6 months. Can you tell me, just visually, what looks like about the lowest yield that a T-bill was showing over the last 6 months? What do you see there? And you're just going to have to sort of eyeball it a little bit. No. Look at the actual bounce, the actual blocks. Those are the actual prices. Yeah, what do you see there? And what's that, at what yield? Can you eyeball? 0.0, it's a little above, a notch above 0.01. Do you see that right there? It's a little notch above 0.01. See those low points there? 0.01 is a very low, low interest rate. So in other words, the rock bottom interest rate, the Fed was essentially keeping it at about as low as it could possibly get. In other words, so the impact of R sub F on any interest rate in the economy was as minimal as possible. So interest rates were sort of sliding just above zero on their base, and then the risk premium was being put onto it for interest rates that we would see on things like home mortgages, auto loans, coupons on bonds, and things like that. Yeah, it bottomed out. You could tell that the Fed was putting great effort into keeping that base interest rate as low as it probably could, practically speaking. By essentially every time banks had some T-bills, the Fed just went in and bought them up from the banks and threw money at the banks for them. And as it bought those T-bills up, of course, that would cause the prices of the T-bills to rise by the demand the Fed was making, and then that would cause yields to go down. And every time the yields began to nudge up, probably in auctions, treasury auctions, where the supply increased and so the price went down, yield went up, what essentially, see these spikes upward? Well, as soon as the spike upward happened, the Fed stepped in and just bought the T-bills up from the banks, driving the prices up and the yields back down again. So that essentially the Fed just, oh, you came up above water, bam, down. Oh, you came up above water, bam, down, 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 stay down. Holding the interest rate, that rock-based interest rate, at its minimum point. I do understand it takes, this is probably the first time you've ever seen anything like this, so it's like you're not seeing it really clearly right now. It soaks in and you begin to be able to appreciate it after you've looked at these more often and more regularly. But as you can see, the Fed was working pretty hard to keep that interest rate as low as it could, as low as possible. But then, if you look at it, the Fed began to let up. It stopped buying up the T-bills from the banks and throwing them. It began to ease off that expansionary monetary policy. What? It really looks like maybe around July, midweek in July, midweek of July 13th to 20th. That looks like the last time the Fed slammed. Do you see it? That was the last time the Fed slammed the interest rate, that yield, back down. Do you see that last drop off, that last bottoming out? After that, it looks like the Fed said, that's enough. It began to see signs of inflation starting to show up in the economy. It began to get worried because jobs numbers were getting too strong. It was seeing probably some data that it's secret data, something about commodities prices. It began to spook it a little bit because there, that looks like maybe on about July the 14th or 15th was the last time the Fed took the Treasury yield and jerked them back down to where it, to essentially the lowest level it could. And after that, it began to let them back up. It let off. Do you see? The Fed didn't do that slam down to the base ever after July 15th, 14th or 15th, it looks like. That was the end of it. You're actually seeing the, what the Fed was doing without actually reading the Fed's notes and minutes and public disclosures. We can see that something, a decision-making change happened at that point. And then they just let go. And as soon as they let go, notice how interest rate, that yield, that R sub F, the Treasury, short-term Treasury yield, began to, took a good jump up. It took a good jump up. Now, that would mean one of two things. The Fed actually obviously the Fed backed off the open market operations, that buying up Treasury bills from the banks, shoveling money into the banks. It obviously let go of that. But something else, why wouldn't have interest rates just kind of stayed right about where they had been, just kind of floating? They clearly had been wanting. Do you see how those that Treasury yield had been wanting to come back up? Every time the Fed was pulling it down, it bounced back up. It wasn't down there on its own. It was pushing back up. Every time, okay, I want to drown you, okay? I take you down to the bottom of the pool. I say, stay there. Okay, and then I let go of you and you go back up. Well, damn it. What the hell? So I pull you back down. Stay. Are you staying? Good, good. Let you go. You go back up. Bitching about air and things like that. You see, there was something that was wanting. Those interest rates were that yield, that R sub F, wanted to come back up. The Fed was actually having to hold it down under the water. And I was trying to call to people to give me sandbags to tie on you. And then, finally, Clouville came in. Notice how there in later part of June, the yield was staying. You finally calmed down and accepted your death, watery death, that is. And then it popped back up, so the Fed pulled it back down. It popped back up, I pulled you back down, and I held you there. And you did okay, you stayed. And then I let you up, and boy, you just boom, boom. Okay, down, bop, down. And at that point, it finally occurred to me, this guy wants to live. Why not let him live? And then there, at about July, that is July the 14th, that was the last time the Fed pulled it back down one last time, and then said, that's it. We're done. Let it go. And not only did it go back up, it went up a lot. Probably because traders realized, the Fed's not going to slam it back down, so it's time for a party. Now the question would be this. What was making Arcebeth want to go up? Real rate of return, supply and demand money. Supply of and demand for money. Well, if there is more demand for money coming out at a given supply level, that would probably mean that would push real interest rates up. Now, the supply of money, well, if the Fed were contracting the money supply, that would make the price of money go up. But why would the Fed be contracting the money supply while it was executing open market operations to the opposite purpose? There might have been some real demand for money coming up, pushing the interest rates up. More demand for anything, its price goes up. Price of money is the real rate of return. But here's the kind of interesting thing right here. Is it possible that expectations of inflation were beginning to start to show up in the economy? Is that why the yields were starting to shoot upward, beginning to try to find air? Is that what's going on? We had inflation for some years, for probably 5-6 years, but it was all contained within the securities market. Stock prices were going through the roof simply because the Fed was shoveling money in, but banks were allowed, after Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999, banks were allowed to do whatever the hell they wanted with that money. They weren't pushing it into the economy, they were buying stocks. Rich people were buying stocks, driving them up. That's sector inflation. The real problem, though, is what happens if that sector inflation begins to spill out, bleed out into the economy. As the demand for workers, as jobs increase, there will be there will have to be higher wages. As businesses start to produce more, they will find themselves in a world where they can sell their products at higher prices somewhat. Quite possibly, that push upward in interest rates, in that very short-term interest rate, was at least in part because the expected inflation premium is beginning to show some life. And hence, that's why the Fed said, all right, we've got a problem here. We're going to have to let go of this pouring money into the economy now. And of course, just when the economy is really beginning to do good, jobs are starting to show up all over the place. Businesses, little businesses, and medium-sized businesses are starting to really feel a good economy. Well, that's when the Fed says, oh, we got to stop this economy. It's getting too strong. That's the way it has been in the past, and it really sucks that policy model. But there you go. Interest rates are rising. The effort is going to be now to try to slowly back away from easy money and try to slowly move toward a more contractionary or a more stable monetary policy. So interest rates are going to go up. What that means to us as business people is that when interest rates go up, we are challenged more in trying to do our business. When interest rates go up, it costs more to borrow money. So big, huge projects begin to slow down. When interest rates go up, most people don't have this idea. When I'm a furniture retailer, when I am a boat retailer, an auto retailer, when I am me, a small art seller, when interest rates go up, it costs more for us to buy our inventory for the year. You have to buy your inventory forward, put it on the floor, and then sell it and pay off your borrowings for it. As interest rates go up, that means it costs me more to put my inventory on the floor because I'm paying a higher interest rate to borrow to buy that inventory. And then I have to sell it and hope that people still have jobs so they can buy that stuff that's on my floor. So things begin to slow down. As you saw in the last lecture, as interest rates go up, the present value of a future cash flow goes down. So in other words, projects, long-term capital projects, their present values will slide downward. And that makes it more likely that we will reject them because it's more likely that the cost now will be more than the present value of the future expected cash flows. This is all part of how it works. You begin to see a window on the future right here. Just look at the short-term yields on T-bills. They will give you some indication. Now, does this mean, well, that's a pretty serious, okay, from the low, which was maybe a little nudge above 0.01. You see the low was 0.01. The high, interestingly enough, there was an intermediate spike. Do you see that spike up there where the yield went to almost, that's like 0.11. That happened around August the 12th. That's a hellacious jump. I mean, that's a serious jump. But fortunately, apparently, that was high enough that people grabbed their barf bags, and it looks like the Fed kind of stepped in it a little. Do you see how that spike made the Fed suddenly say, whoops, we got to shovel some money fast, and we got to buy up a bunch of T-bills from banks. Do you see that? That spike happened, and then the Fed kind of said, well, that's kind of interesting. Let's see if we can get it down a little bit, and it didn't push it down much, so the Fed got butch, and they put on some Rocky music, and they cranked that thing back down. Do you see how they cranked it down there on about the 23rd of August? That spike up there to 0.11 scared the bejesus out of the Fed, it looks like to me. That was way too much too fast. That's the kind of thing you see. There are these traders who loves themselves volatility. They love the roller coasters. That's how they make their little bits of money here and there, by playing on ups and downs that happen, violent ups and downs. Normal business people, normal humans, don't like volatility. If you have a choice between a nice train ride on Amtrak to Chicago and a ride on an aerobatic airplane that takes you up and down and up and down to Chicago, which would you prefer? The train. Most people would. There are some people that, yeah, please, make it happen. Make me vomit. But most normal people would prefer not to have that happen. So that volatility there was scary to the Fed because that rattles markets. That scares markets. That scares business people. When you see interest rates going up and down like that, that's not what we really care to have happen. So the interest rate spiked upward. That's scary enough. And then the Fed said, all right, we got to bring this back down. So they slammed it back down. And it looks like they thought that the spike was sort of like some anomaly, because they just stepped right back and up those interest rates went again. Poof. Right, do you see it? Right there, that was almost like in about a week and a half, 2 weeks, interest rate, the risk-free rate, the treasury bill rate, shot up to nearly 0.11. The Fed got excited a couple of days later when they woke up and they slammed the interest rates back down. They said, there, that'll teach you. And then as soon as they let go, they went back up again. Not quite as much. Apparently, the markets were saying that they had the sense the Fed's going to slam us if we push them too hard. But you notice something interesting there. The moving average, the blue average, is definitely going up. No doubt about it. we're going into a higher interest rate environment with all the consequences I've been talking about the last 30 minutes. No doubt about it also that there's more volatility. Do you see how the volatility does seem to be greater now than it was before? There's more width in the swings than there was. Do you see that? I want to make sure you see that, that the swings down there were just day-to-day, boom, 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 boom. But now the swings are getting harder. There's more width in the swings. And like I said, volatility, the only people on earth who love volatility are roller coaster riders and crazy mofo traders. The rest of us in the business world do not like volatility because that makes it even harder for us to predict from one day to the next what's going to happen. Now, that's your first window. Go. Good question. There are very powerful other forces that exist. We don't, it's not conspiracy theory, but one thing that goes on is that part of this is China, the problem with China. But what drives currency swings is this shadowy world of currency traders. Now, in my day, I wanted to think, yeah, I can play in that world. But this is a world that I could not even give you a name of a real hardcore currency trader. But currency traders, a general sentiment is that if currency traders want something to happen, and the central banks of the G8, those eight countries who try to get together to help each other's economies and coordinate economic policy, if the central banks of the G8 go up against the global currency traders, the global currency traders will win. They are that powerful. There is a good reason, and I didn't get into it, but damn you, you made me get into it, to believe that some of this was currency trader action. What they were doing is they were arbitraging currencies against each other. They were gaming the currencies because of the uncertainty that was happening in China. You see, whenever there is uncertainty, whenever there is economic volatility, that's when bad guys come in. That's when vultures and predators are best at what they do. A calm, quiet global economy is not a place where you have a lot of opportunities to take big shots. But when things go crazy, the currency traders can just make it even more crazier than it was. When it's a very quiet ville, we could walk in, we could take command, we could secure the area, police down any problems very quickly. But if we got in there and we or someone before us had caused a lot of confusion, hysteria, explosions, sound, noise, smoke, well, it was just a field day for every bad guy on earth to go taking things, killing people, and shooting everywhere. And that's what happens in this. A Chinese economy starting to dirty its diaper and it's all of its phony money supply increases causing the wonder economy to grow at such a wonderful, incredible pace. Yeah, China is going to be the global economy of the world in 20 years. Well, when the shart hit the fan, it got bad, it got crazy. And I would bet you my bottom dollar that some of that action is those unregulated, unknown, shadowy playas that are all over the place waiting for anything that's a bad place to happen. Did any of you ever see the movie Lord of War? Yeah, you see the great movie. I mean, I just identify with it. He didn't go to places that were calm to sell arms. He didn't go to places that were pleasant. He went to the worst places on earth and made them worse with what his trade was. There you go. Now, stop asking questions that ruin my life. No, thank you for asking that. I did want to do that. Let me show you something now. Now to see the future. This thing right here is a yield curve on the left at stockmarkets.com/freecharts/yieldcurve.php. This tells you the yields on progressively longer-term treasury instruments. At the left is the yield on a very short-term treasury bill. At the far right is the yield on a very long-term treasury bond, the 30-year. So in other words, on the right you would have a 3-month, on the left you would have, on the left you would have a 3-month, on the right you would have a 30-year. So this is a nice curve. It tells you a lot about the perspective on the economy as time goes on. A smoothly rising curve, not violently arching, not falling. God, not falling. That's a nice thing, because what it says is that as time goes on, there's pretty much nothing but a maturity premium building in the yield curve. You see this? Look at this. The arch is mostly just as you get longer-term instruments, there's a maturity premium built in. Now, that maturity premium could be nasty. If there's a lot of uncertainty, the maturity premium gets a lot worse at all levels. But this one looks pretty nice. But it also tells us some things. Let's take this out to where it was a long, long time ago. This, I believe, would be 6 months out, I think. Now, let's pull it back in. That would have been the yield curve. The very gray thing on the top and the bottom would have been the yield curve back 6 months ago. So let's look at this thing as it comes in and see what it tells us. Do you see how the top of the yield curve out here was flattening out? It was coming down. That would probably indicate that there was a sentiment that over a very long period of time, maybe the expected inflation premium wasn't going to be as serious. Volatility of interest rates wouldn't be as serious out there. That can be a good thing until it's not a good thing. But we'll talk about that in a minute. See how it flattened out the top, the long end, eased downward. As long as that doesn't go too crazy, that's a good sign. But then we get in closer. Oh, look. Where it was on the bottom is now coming back up. More expectation of inflation. And then it seals itself down. So way out here, the top was flattening out. And then, in more recent times, underneath is starting to come back up. Not a worry about inflation, expected inflation. Not much worry about volatility of interest rates causing the maturity premium to increase. See that? Good things. Bright future. But then, it's pushing back up. So that tells us that there was a very good view of the economy. Maybe a little bit too optimistic. But in recent times, the yield curve is starting to push up on the lower end. It's starting to push up. There is one piece of good news, though. And this is where you can tell the future. There is a kind of yield curve shape that we like. The yield curve shape that we like and I really wish I had a marker that didn't suck. A yield curve shape that we like. Really? I do apologize. Has a nice upward smooth arc to it. I so need a better marker. It really irritates the hell out of me that I don't have a better marker. Nope, that one's dead. Is there any marker on this planet that doesn't suck? Okay, let's try this. I'm about to try to use the paint, PC paint or something. Okay, that's a nice yield curve. It's got a nice upward slope to it. In other words, you've got inflation compounding on inflation, but it's not severe. You've got the maturity premium compounding as for longer yields, which is what it should do. Here's one that would be highly undesirable. One that arced upward very hard. That would be a good sign that there's an expectation, a long-term expectation of hard inflation. That would be a nasty yield curve if it arcs too much. The one that you're seeing right there is actually fairly tame. I wouldn't say that's the ideal, but kind of keep that in your mind from now on. And you'll look at these. It's a good thing to keep an eye on for your own purposes so you don't have to listen to someone else tell you what you could already know. That one's not bad. The one we're seeing right now doesn't suck. But if you see that thing start to arc upward, if the tail out here starts to go like that, look, have you ever seen the Loch Ness Monster? Okay, here's the thing about those lake monsters. When they're going like this, swirl, swirl through the water, slither, slither, they're really not much of a problem. It's when they bring their head out of the water and they start making that you say, bitch, stop it. Okay. And that's really with yield curves. As long as they're just, that sticks its head out of the water, guys need to eat. But when it comes up like that and it notices that you are to eat, that's when you are a little concerned about it. Okay. But there's one that is nasty. Every recession has been preceded by the shape I'm going to show you. But the shape has actually shown up a few times and a full-blown recession didn't follow it. We've had an economic pause or slowdown. So in other words, this will give you a false signal of a recession sometimes. But it's almost always going to tell you correctly that there's going to be a slowdown. The one I'm going to show you that you don't ever want to see is an inverted yield curve. That's called an inverted yield curve. Somewhere in the yield curve, an intermediate yield is lower than a yield after it. In other words, you might see a five-year treasury note at 4.2% and then see a 10-year treasury bond after it at 4%. That shouldn't happen, and it is a real bad warning sign. Now, I'll tell you what that in the months leading up to the great crash in 2008, there were all kinds of warning signs out there. No one was paying attention to it. Investment in plant and equipment had been sliding for like 6 years. The budget deficits had gone crazy after we'd had surpluses. There was a severe problem with people borrowing money because wages have been stagnant for decades and people started borrowing like a blind trout to have things to make themselves feel better. are the number of euro dollars, M3 was skyrocketing. There were all kinds of warning signs. But in the months leading up, the yield curve looked like this. That's not an inversion. And I sat there, and it, right there in the middle, it was getting flatter and flatter, but it didn't invert. In other words, there was no place where a yield on a longer instrument was less than yield on a shorter instrument. And I watched it every day, every day. And then, what was it, June the 8th? A 5-year treasury note had a higher yield for a couple of hours than a 10-year bond, just for a few hours. That's called a technical inversion. And at that point, I said, that's the inversion. And interestingly enough, really quickly, the inversion disappeared. Probably trading action by the Fed of some kind made the inversion vanish. Because there were a couple of us writers who were writing on finance and economics at the time who saw it, and we called it. And the Fed probably wanted to get us conspiracy theorists, as they call us, to shut up. So the yield curve came back into normal alignment. It still looked ugly. That's an ugly yield curve. You shouldn't have a yield curve look like that anyway, but it wasn't inverted. But then, interestingly enough, in early September, it inverted again. And it looked like the Fed took action, but the inversion stayed. And the inversion, again, was a very small inversion. It was just barely inverted, but it was an inversion. Two inversions with action to try to make the inversions go away, that was it. There was going to be a recession, and it was going to start with a bang. I figured within a couple of weeks. It did on September the 15th. All hell broke loose, and we were about 2 hours from financial apocalypse. But anyway, right now, for what you could hear, well, the economy sucks or this, that, or the other thing, no, that's a fairly healthy yield curve. And it sure as hell isn't anywhere near, it doesn't even have the right shape to become an inverted yield curve. That does not mean that it could not happen, though. So if you want to look to the future, if you want a good window on what's happening, look at yield curves. It's a simple tool. It's a visual tool. And just essentially, if it ever inverts, well, get the hell out of Dodge, because that means that you're probably going to have a recession. Not definitely, but probably you'll have a recession. That's all I have for you. Go home.